Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It does get very, very confusing. So what are the international laws and consequences around the use of nuclear in a war? Professor Anna Mart van Wyk is a professor of the Department of Politics and International Relations at the University of Johannesburg. A very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, Howard, and good morning to the listeners. I am good, and I hope that you are too.
I am indeed. So obviously we know that there is a close cooperation between South Africa and Iran. What we feel about that is neither here nor there for this conversation. But is it possible, given South Africa's nuclear history, that there is some form of cooperation between the countries in this regard?
I highly doubt it, to be quite honest. Since South Africa gave up its nuclear weapons in the early 1990s and under the ANC government from 1994, South Africa has really become a proponent of non-proliferation. So it's strongly outspoken, you know, against development and the use of nuclear weapons. So on a government level, no, I doubt very much that there would be any help to Iran from South Africa's side. Of course, as has been the case in the past with the AQ Khan smuggling network, there might be individuals that might be drawn in, you know, with their expertise that might have been involved in the South African bomb project, but on a government-to-government level, definitely not.
Right. So what actually happened to South Africa's nuclear program?
Well, the nuclear weapons were developed during the apartheid era, between 1978, basically, and 1989. So in 1989, we saw an eclipse of power in South Africa where F.W. de Klerk took over from P.W. Botha. And he was much more open, as you know, to negotiations and that sort of thing. And also then, he always claimed that he was against nuclear weapons, and he foresaw that South Africa's threat perception changed because of the end of the border war with Angola. And that nuclear weapons had basically become superfluous with a changing situation. So under his leadership, as secret as the program was, so secret was the dismantling as well. So between 1989 and 1990, all of the weapons were dismantled. The enriched uranium is still in storage, funny enough,
yes,
at Pelindaba, and a strict observance by the International Atomic Energy Agency. But yes, we only had basically, six weapons and enough material to make a seventh one. But all of those were destroyed. The casings of the bombs were melted. The enriched uranium is in storage. That's basically what happened to that program.
So if a country is part of a nuclear program like that, are they required to sign to the global standards, or is this something that they can just do on their own?
In South Africa's case, we never signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which is the basic treaty that you undertake if you're a signatory of that treaty, that you would not, develop nuclear weapons or assist another country in developing nuclear weapons. And that is the reason why Israel, of course, is also, is also not a signatory of the NPT, because under that treaty, you cannot develop, you undertake not to develop any nuclear weapons. In the case of Iran, Iran is a signatory, but I think they are very close to do what North Korea have done, and that is to withdraw from the treaty, and within a space of 3 years, North Korea tested a nuclear weapon. So that is unfortunately the gaps that we have in treaties like that, is that except for sanctions, there's no real consequences for countries to withdraw from that. South Africa signed the treaty in 1991, but while you were signatory of that treaty, you undertake not to develop nuclear weapons.
What's the history of Pakistan? I mean, I'm assuming that, I'm asking you these questions as though you know absolutely everything. So if you don't, I do apologize. But how did Pakistan land up with nuclear weapons?
So in 1974, India tested what they called a peaceful nuclear explosive. Now, that's often the first step to a weapons program. A peaceful nuclear explosive is an explosive device with the idea to use it, for construction, for deep mining or the construction of harbors and that sort of thing. But it's often the first step to a weapons program, as was the case with India. So when and Pakistan became really scared when India tested in 1974, and because of the history between the two countries, they decided, yo, if India is going this direction, then probably we would need to get our own deterrent against India. So then India tested, and so Pakistan started their own program, with the help of AQ Khan, who had acquired a lot of knowledge working at a civil nuclear plant in Europe. And he went back to Pakistan and said, well, I've got the knowledge, I can make you a bomb. And Pakistan said, okay. The Pakistan leadership at that point said, okay, let's do it, because we need a deterrent against India. So in 1998, India tested quite a few nuclear weapons. And within a week after that, Pakistan also tested. Now, both of those states are also not signatories of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. India, in particular, have always sought, to become a part of the treaty, but then they want the same status as, for example, the United States and Russia, the UK, China, and France, who tested before 1967, and under the treaty were allowed to keep their weapons. So they're the only legitimate nuclear weapon states. So yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned Pakistan. There's something that I want to say in relation to Iran, if I'm
Of course.
so one of the Iranese, well, it's an official, have made a statement that if Israel should Israel attack Iran with a nuclear weapon, then Pakistan will definitely come to the aid of Iran and nuke Israel, basically. To which Pakistan have come back and said, no, don't draw us into that conflict. We are still focused. Yeah, that's very interesting. So even if it is a basically another Muslim country,
They're saying that.
Pakistan feels, yeah. So Pakistan feels just because you're Muslim, it's not to say that we are going to help you, because it does not fit into our own strategic objectives, which is to keep an eye on India. So that's also a
So that's interesting, because that was almost like fake news, because I was, when you follow the news, you almost are led to believe. I mean, not that there's, we've seen no sign that Israel has any intention whatsoever of using nuclear weapons. It's certainly not something, given how they've been targeting very precise targets in Iran, and given the information that they have, there seems to be absolutely no reason or basis for it. But so it obviously is something designed to stir this up. And I'm delighted that Pakistan is saying, hold on a minute, don't get us involved.
Because for them it's an escalatory situation, and they're very fixed on having nuclear as a deterrent against an enemy, which is India. Coming back to Israel and the nuclear option for Israel, you're quite right. Israel has made no indication whatsoever that they might go the nuclear option. There's Israel's deterrent strategy is what is called the Samson option. So that basically defines, their nuclear policy. And in that policy, under the Samson option, it says that nuclear weapons is only regarded as a last resort against a country whose military has invaded and or destroyed much of Israel. So which means even if Israel, is largely destroyed through a conventional onslaught, it might go to the Samson option. But at this stage, they haven't made any indications that they would go that way. I'm not sure if one can trust Iran.
Well, I think we're pretty sure that you can't, but but interesting nevertheless. I do need to leave it there. This was such a fascinating conversation. I really, really appreciate it. And I think you should get used to it, because I'm sure we're going to get you back. Professor Annemarie van Wyk, professor in the Department of Politics and International Relations at the University of Johannesburg. Give me your thoughts, your reaction, 061-895-1019.